Inflation, it's hanging on. I'm David Brancaccio. A European court has ruled that two influential Russian businessmen were wrongly sanctioned in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The billionaire oligarchs are linked to Russia's biggest private bank and to the country's leader, Vladimir Putin. But the EU court said that those two things were not enough to justify freezing their assets. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with details.
Yeah, David, the two people in question are both billionaires, Peter Avin and Mikhail Friedman. Avin is said to have Russian and Latvian nationality. Friedman is Russian and Israeli. Both men are major shareholders of Alpha Group. That is a conglomerate which owns Alpha Bank. That's a private Russian bank. The two men had appealed the sanctions that were imposed on them between February 2022, that's when Russia invaded Ukraine, and March 2023. And the European Union Court of Justice sided with them this morning, ruling that EU officials had failed to provide evidence that the men had materially supported Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The court said just them being close to Russia's leader, Vladimir Putin, which is not in dispute, was not enough of a reason to sanction them.
Now, the way it works with this court is that the ruling can be appealed, but in the meantime, do these billionaires get their frozen assets unfrozen?
Well, for one thing, they face another round of sanctions from the EU, and this ruling doesn't directly address that second round of sanctions. And both are also sanctioned by the U.S. for the same reasons, the war in Ukraine and their connections to Russia's levers of power. And according to the U.S. Treasury Department, David, the principal addresses for both billionaires aren't even in the EU. They're in the UK and in Russia. So the two aren't likely to see a big change right away. But the Kremlin wasted no time in using the ruling for its messaging, saying Western sanctions were illegal and destructive.
Nova, thank you. The stock and bond markets were knocked for a loop this morning after consumer inflation came in slightly higher than expected. It's the Consumer Price Index, up 0.4% in March. With this data, we can tell you prices moved up 3.5% in a year. When central banks with their hands on interest rates are looking for something closer to 2%, analyst Susan Schmidt is head of public equity at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board.
Well, the CPI number, Consumer Price Index, did come in higher than people expected. And that does show that there's still price pressure in the market. Over half of that price pressure came from gas and shelter. So think about what you're paying for your rent and how much you're paying to fill your gas tank. Both of those costs were a big part of this increase month over month and year over year. And that's going to keep the Fed tentative on changing interest rates.
The guardians of interest rates at the Fed like to see 2%, but year over year with this data, we can now say prices went up 3.5%. Interest rates are not coming down anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And the Fed's been very clear that they want to wait and be sure that we're on that path towards their 2% target. The data is going the opposite direction for them. So that's going to make their job increasingly difficult. Investors will look at this and expect that this is going to cause further pause in the Fed's decision towards lowering interest rates.
Susan Schmidt, head of public equity at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 487 points now, 1.3%. The S&P and the NASDAQ are each down 1.1%. With bonds also selling off, the benchmark 10-year interest rate is up at 4.49%. As we were saying, some of it is the cost of fuel. AAA says the average is $3.62 a gallon this week. A month ago, it was $3.39. That works out to be a jump of 6.8%. Also, the price of renting or buying a place to live, driven by the general shortage of housing. We also reported today on the sharp jump in the number of cities where the median or typical cost of a home is now $1 million or more. It's no longer just San Francisco, New York, L.A. The $1 million median for homes is up to 550 cities now. That's in the Marketplace Morning podcast if you want to consult it. We know that immigration is a hot, often divisive topic with many sides to it, including states and cities struggling to pay the cost of setting up new arrivals. There are benefits to the economy as well. The Congressional Budget Office looked at the recent surge in immigration and finds immigrants have been critical to filling spots that employers have been struggling to fill. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell looked at the CBO's analysis. Chris, what do you see?
David, the CBO, they ran some updated numbers, and the agency's economists now estimate that immigrants will add $7 trillion to gross domestic product over the next decade. Federal tax revenues will be greater by about $1 trillion than previously expected.
Now, one industry where the impact of immigrant workers is particularly significant right now is healthcare, right? I mean, the healthcare field has a current and even future shortage of doctors and nurses.
You're absolutely right, David. So there are nearly 2.8 million immigrants, and they were employed as healthcare workers in 2021. And that makes up about 18% of those employed in healthcare occupations. This data comes from the Migration Policy Institute. So foreign-born healthcare workers, they come here through a variety of legal mechanisms, and odds are the role of immigrants in healthcare will only expand in coming years and decades, largely thanks to the combination of low fertility rates in the U.S., in an aging population.
And staying on healthcare, what else stood out for you looking at the data?
So, David, let's look at the role of foreign-born physicians and surgeons. These are high-skilled immigrants, and they account for about 26% of their professional occupation nationwide. Now, places that rely heavily on foreign-born physicians and surgeons include New Jersey at 37%, Florida at 35%, New York 33%. And, you know, perhaps these figures aren't all that surprising since these are traditional gateway states, but the numbers in North Dakota essentially match the national average.
Well, that's interesting. North Dakota doesn't have a particularly large immigrant population in general, does it?
No, not these days. I mean, only about 5% of North Dakotans were born in another country. Immigrant healthcare workers have been critical to a state that is grappling with labor shortages. So looking at physicians, Joshua Wynn, he's dean of the University of North Dakota School of Medicine and Health Sciences. He says foreign-born physicians and native-born people who get their medical degree from a non-U.S. institution, you know, they have really helped to fill primary care, internal medicine, and family medicine positions.
Yet I talk to them. There are native-born job applicants. They're vying for a job, and they're worried that skilled immigrants will get the jobs, and they won't.
You know, this is always a concern, but immigrant employment isn't a zero-sum game. Dean Wynn notes the benefits of international medical school graduates. But at the same time, he quickly adds, North Dakota has also succeeded in training more of its own and improved retention among medical school graduates in the state. And his experience reinforces an economic study by three economists. Their bottom line, an increase in the supply of foreign physicians derived from a more flexible migration policy had no detectable effect on the employment of U.S.-trained doctors. Now, that works for me.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Thanks for looking at that.
Thanks a lot, David.
And today a book comes out about a piece of World War I propaganda that bartenders to this day pour into fluted glasses. The French 75, the marketing of an enduring cocktail. It's in the Marketplace Morning Podcast now. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.